Here we go.
Welcome to BP WrigleyCast, the show that tells you not to freak out about the Cubs and then gives you every reason to do so. My name is Ryan Davis, and I'm joined this week by Isaac Bennett. Carlos and Joel had to take this week off to travel to Pittsburgh for AnthroCon 2016. So with that, hi, Isaac, how you doing?
Hey, Ryan, how's it going? I just wanted to point out that Joel doesn't even have to dress up. He can just take off his shirt and fit right in.
That's right, and maybe he'll carry Carlos around on his back.
I don't want to visualize that, but here we are.
Yeah. Anyway, that's enough ripping on our co-hosts for not showing up for another week. As you may know, we missed last week, and because we did so, the Cubs have gone completely into the tank. So we'll take that on ourselves.
Is that definitely our fault?
I think so. Yeah, I can't think of any other reason why the Cubs would go 1-6.
You know, what was shocking to me is that we actually had people reach out to us, sad or complaining that we didn't record a podcast. I was kind of assuming everybody'd be like, oh my word, this is an amazing week. We didn't have to begrudgingly listen to our least favorite podcast.
Yeah, no, I kind of also figured that nobody would have even noticed that we missed a week. But yeah, we had at least two or three messages on Twitter basically saying, hey, where'd you guys go? But no, we're still around. It's just, Carlos and Joel have higher priorities this week. So it's the best we can do.
Yeah, so now you're stuck with the two of us. And we do understand that at least half of you have already turned it off because of having zero likable hosts now on the show this week. So we're sorry. Bear with us.
Yeah, no, I was thinking the same thing. Everybody's already just, oh, well, delete.
We're done.
So enough moving around talking about Star Wars. The Cubs. Yes. They have been playing poorly. Isaac, on a scale of 1 to 100, how much above 100 are you scared?
Well, whatever infinite is, and then all the way back around to one. I don't think this week really phased or changed the way I think about this team at all. We still got solid starting pitching for the most part, and had some shaky bullpen outings, but nothing that really, really jumped out at me too much. It's just the team needs to get healthy, and I think you're seeing, some of the younger guys struggle a little bit. And at the end of the day, I mean, when you're playing without a lot of your lineup, it's you just can't draw a reflection from that. So I would say I am really don't feel any differently about this team that I did 7 days ago.
And I would agree with all that. I wrote down a couple stats that I think should at least ease some of the fears. The Cubs had a 4-8 stretch earlier this year that we've talked about that they very clearly bounced back from. They had their most recent stretch is 5-8. When they started that stretch, they were 9 games up on the Cardinals. They went 5-8, and as of right now, the Cubs are also 9 games up on the Cardinals.
Yeah.
They didn't lose a single game in the standings in that time. The other fact that I have, 6 of their next 10 is against the Cincinnati Reds.
Yay. That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there's really just not a lot to be concerned about with this team. The only thing that I would say that is of minor concern is that this stretch wasn't running parallel to the team being healthy and just having a couple, bad luck losses. This was, I think what you're seeing is when a team loses a bunch of starters to injuries, whether they're on the DL or still, on the team, just sitting out a couple games here or there. When you lose a bunch of regular players and have to call up guys from the minors or trade for, Oakland's worst utility player and start plugging those guys in, this is what happens sometimes. You have a lull. I mean, you can only be so deep, I mean, the Cubs have an amazingly deep roster, but, when you're starting, a kid like Albert Almora and, obviously Contreras has really ripped the cover off the ball, but you've got Coughlin out there every day. Hayward's still struggling. you're moving guys around everywhere. I mean, there's only so much you can cover before you start losing a game here and there. That's the only thing I'd be concerned about.
Yeah, and I think part of it too is just the comfort in the clubhouse as well, because you're introducing a lot of new personalities and really young guys. And I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that, but I just think that the thing that this team had going for it more than anything else was its just overwhelmingly wonderful culture. And that hasn't changed, but you're seeing some tumult in the clubhouse. And I think probably just the lack of comfortability and the general changing around of the clubhouse has probably not helped either. And I just, the games that Anthony Rizzo sat out of, you could see how important he was to the lineup, and it really changed everything. So not having Rizzo and Fowler, even beyond the statistical contributions that they have, it just left holes in the lineup, and that really changed everything. And because neither of those injuries are considered serious long-term, that's why I'm still fairly comfortable, is because both those guys will be back fairly soon and we'll forget about this week.
Yeah, and it really, my major concern that they might go on a stretch like this happened when Fowler went on the DL, because I truly believe the you go, we go saying that they have with him. I feel like he is a huge cog in what they do, and without him there, even though Coughlin has come in and actually, you know, when he's been in the leadoff spot, he's been getting on base over, I think it's like over 400 since he came back, but it's just a completely different thing. I mean, Coughlin's getting on base, but Fowler gets on base. And if he's not taking a walk, he's actually, you know, putting the ball into the gap sometimes. So I just don't see him replicating what Fowler does for the team. And obviously on the defensive side, Fowler's been much improved this year. Coughlin is, you know, an iron glove in the field. So,
I'm curious, and this may be a premature time to talk about this. We didn't plan to talk about this, but as noticeably apparent as it is when we are missing, the Cubs are missing Dexter Fowler, does that persuade you to rethink the roster next year as to whether they should actually make a real push to re-sign Fowler?
I've been on that fence since the beginning of the season, since they brought him back, and you'll recall I was talking about continuing to try and push to bring him back all through last offseason. I thought he was very important to what they did last year, and if you look at his cold stretch in the early part of the season versus his hot stretch in the late part of the season, and what he did in the playoffs, what he's done early this year, when the Cubs have been winning, whether it's coincidence or not, it's run parallel to Fowler hitting the ball. Just period. When he's hot, they're hot. So I've always felt like, you know, he's an underrated player overall, and he's an underrated defender who's getting better this year. There's no reason not to bring the guy back, especially if, you know, I'm not saying he's going to give you a massive discount, but, you know, maybe he shaves a few dollars to make it work to come back to a place that he likes being. I mean, it's obvious he likes being here. He turned down less money from the Orioles to get a, you know, the better situation. So
yeah,
I do find it difficult to go into next year saying Soler, Schwarber, Hayward. I just do.
Yeah, well, and there's some other options there, because if you're going to play Javi Baez, then Bryant would be out there. You've also got Almora and Caesar, so there's some other options in the outfield as well. But the only thing that I wonder is, you know, the Cubs could come out and say, yeah, we want you back, and he could even be willing to take a discount. But with as well as he's played this year, it wouldn't shock me if somebody comes way over the top and just does something totally unreasonable and gives him, you know, 50% more money than we're thinking they might. That's the only thing that gives me pause in saying, yeah, they should definitely bring him back, because I feel like somebody might say, oh my word, Dexter Fowler was the MVP in the first half or close to it, and we're going to give him $80 million or $90 million or something like that. I don't know. It'll be really interesting to see how this offseason plays out in regards to Fowler.
I did a look at Fowler, I want to say last September or October, and his numbers and what he should get on the open market based on what other players of similar style and similar value got in previous years. And then, you know, taking that money and basically putting it into 2016 dollars. And what I found based on that was Fowler should have been worth a 4-year to $60 to $65 million deal
last year.
Last year going into free agency. Obviously, he got nowhere close. Yeah, nowhere close to that. But if that's the deal, if it's 4 years, let's say $70 million, do you do that for him?
From the Cubs' perspective?
Yeah.
4 years and $70 million. Man, at the, today, sitting here right now, watching Soler's glass legs and you know, Schwarber not knowing how he's going to come back, if I'm the Cubs, I'd probably say yes here on June 26th. That could look a lot different on September 26th, depending on how Almora hits and Soler comes back and things of that nature. But, man, today, yeah. I mean, after a 1-6 stretch, it's like, absolutely, we need that guy in our lineup. But, yeah, I you know, asked me in 3 months, but for today, I think if I'm the Cubs, I'd do it.
My question, if we are considering that, is Schwarber, what do you do with the guy?
Well, I think that it remains to be seen as to whether his mobility comes back, but I really think that if he's back, Schwarber's an everyday starter in left field, and then that's where it gets pretty sticky, because you've got to find spots for Soler, and you have to find spots for Baez, and those are probably the two odd guys out, with Bryant at third, Schwarber in left. If you re-signed Fowler in center, and Hayward in right, but there's nothing saying that Baez couldn't spell everybody on the diamond occasionally, probably playing 4 days a week and doing that, and then Soler could be truly a bench bat. But I'm looking at Soler as a guy that really, really might get moved at this deadline or in the offseason if they went ahead and re-signed Fowler. Been saying it for a year, and I feel like it's a broken record, but I still think Soler might be a guy that ends up on another team.
Yeah, you might be right on that. And I don't think they've made it very clear that they're not going to move Schwarber, but kind of moving this forward a little bit, the Cubs have been scouting they're all three major relievers for the Yankees. We could talk, you know, for days about the ramifications of bringing in a guy like Aroldis Chapman, but we don't need to get into that. Let's just focus on the idea of bringing in a big reliever or two. The talk was, somebody said, would the Cubs trade Schwarber for Andrew Miller? The Cubs basically laughed that off and said, no, of course not. Everybody laughed that off, said, no, of course not. In the mind, putting it in your mind, the idea of bringing back Fowler for next year on this kind of deal, and having already said that you would do that, if the Yankees came back and said, we'll give you Betances and Miller, two guys under control, two very, very valuable, best in the league relievers, but we want Schwarber and nothing else, would you do it?
I've thought about this a lot from when we talked about it earlier in the day, just very briefly. And my answer, and this may be very unpopular because it's so tempting to go out and get those two guys and have just a dominant trio in the back end of the bullpen with Rondon and Betances and Miller. But my answer is no. And the reason for that is the only strong area of free agency next year is relief pitchers. So if your whole thing is we must go get relief pitchers to strengthen the back of the bullpen, that can be had in free agency with just money. And because of that, there's no way I'm giving up a guy like Schwarber for any relievers, any quantity of them, because there's nothing like Schwarber on the free agent market. And if you do go out and try and find a guy like that, you're going to be talking hundreds of millions of dollars. So just listen to this real quick for some of the names that could be out on the market free agent wise for relievers next year. You've got Wade Davis, you've got Neftali Feliz, you've got Kenley Jansen, you've got Mark Melanson, you've got Jonathan Papelbon, Joel Peralta, Fernando Rodney, Sergio Romo, Fernando Salas, Drew Storen, Koji Uehara, Jordan Walden. Those guys are all free agents after this season. Plus lefties, you've got Aroldis Chapman, Boone Logan, Eric O'Flaherty, Mark Sapinski. So you've got quite a huge list of relievers that are available. So yes, you're going to have to spend some money, but the fact of the matter is if they want to go get two awesome relievers, they can do it for just money this year and hang on to a guy that you simply can't replace in Kyle Schwarber. So the answer is no, I'm not giving that guy up. I would consider, you know, packaging something around Soler and several minor leaguers to make that move and go get him. I would be much more amicable to that, but nope, Kyle Schwarber's not going anywhere if it's for relief pitchers.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. I thought it was an interesting concept. to think about just because they are two very dominant relievers. But at the flip side of it, I just think, man, they really need to, I think they really need two relievers. They can't just, like last year, they didn't really make any moves to shore up the bullpen. And whether that affected them getting swept by the Mets or not, I don't know. But you just, I can't see them getting past the trade deadline and not getting two good arms to put in the bullpen so you aren't relying on either Clayton Richard or Justin Grimm or Spencer Patton, you know, these kinds of guys.
Yeah, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. I just don't think that you're going to give up a guy like Schwarber to do it. I think that there are six or seven names in the minor leagues that have all had huge years. Ian Happ, Jaime Candelario, Dan Vogelbach has had a huge year. Obviously, Eloy Jimenez. There's a whole cachet of guys that you could use to shore up your pen. And I don't think a blockbuster deal, including, you know, one of your probably three best hitters, is necessary to do that. So I'm fully with you in that they need one at least, and maybe two really nice arms back there, not only for this year, but moving forward. And if you do that, you can address that in free agency with that huge list of names that I just gave you. So you can do it. I would be floored if they decided to do it with Kyle Schwarber. I don't think there's any way they do that. But I wouldn't be shocked to see, especially if Dayan Betances is included, I wouldn't be shocked to see Jorge Soler's name in that deal.
If the Yankees were interested in Soler.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It is. But honestly, being able to throw Soler into, and I don't want to rag on his defense too much, because I think that he made some real strides this year. I've been very critical of his defense, but I think he made real strides this year. It was very exciting. That was the most exciting thing that I'd seen out of Soler. But the fact that, you know, if he did have a slightly tight hamstring or something, that you could put him in the DH slot, it changes everything for a guy like Soler. So I don't know why they wouldn't be interested, but you never know. They may not want to give up their young stud and Betances either for him.
Yeah, and there's a lot to be said about the control that they have over Betances and Miller, and how close the Yankees think they are to, even if they're not contending this year, making it work next year. I mean, they have a very weak division. I mean, there's no one team that you can point to and say, in 2017, this team is going to dominate the AL East. And on top of that, the Yankees are a 500 team this year. I mean, they have to be self-aware enough to know that they're not going to be winning the World Series this year and that they should be making moves to get better for next year. But, you know, does trading Andrew Miller and Dylan Betances, does that really do that for them, make them better in 2017? It does for Chapman, but it doesn't necessarily for those two, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I believe that they should be self-aware enough to realize that they're not going to be good this year, and they're not going to be good next year, and they're probably not going to be good in 2018. So they're likely going to throw away the currency that they've got. Those guys are never going to get more valuable than they are today as we sit here. So they're likely going to throw really, really good relievers away when they could get huge hauls for them, just like Ken Giles brought in last year. And to me, they should be self-aware enough to say, we're not good enough. We're not going to be as good as the Red Sox for the next couple of years. So we need to get really young, really fast. So if I was running the Yankees, I would get everything that I could for at least Miller this year. And obviously Chapman, he's gone for sure, but at least Miller. And then I would possibly wait until after this free agent period, until next year, to trade Betances, just to see what you could get next deadline. But I think they need to be self-aware enough to say, we're old, we're getting older, and we need to get young really, really quick.
All very good points. Moving away from Yankees too much, because we don't want to get too speculative about what the Yankees are going to be doing with their relievers, but we know the Cubs need relievers. We know that their roster right now is made up of a lot of players that aren't going to be there all year. Whether, you know, a guy like Almora will be around in September and October, I think is a, you know, a different question, but they've got a lot of guys on the roster that I think are not going to be around all year. When guys like La Stella and Fowler and Soler all start coming off the disabled list, how does this roster change? I mean, you're going to have to see guys move. There are some guys out of options. Does Almora stick around all year? Do you have to end up having to DFA Caesar because at least now offensively, Caesar and Almora are providing about the same thing, but Almora is far superior with the glove. What do you do? How does that move? How do you move the roster?
Well, you've got a couple of different things, and you just mentioned that Almora was far superior to Caesar, and I think that's true, but it's not like Caesar's a liability out there, at least not in my opinion. So I don't think that Almora has seen the last of Des Moines, Iowa. I think he'll be back there before the end of the year just because of the roster machinations and what needs to happen to get everybody back onto the roster with all the injuries. So if we see LaStella and Solaire both come back in relatively short time frame, I do think Almora could get optioned back to AAA. The other thing that could possibly happen, and we spoke about this earlier, where you mentioned that Coughlin could possibly see a DFA, and I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility, but LaStella still has minor league options as well. So if they needed, you know, a week or two or three where LaStella went back to AAA, I think that's possible too, where they could send LaStella down and keep Coughlin on the roster, because I think they like his bat quite a bit. I just I wrote a piece this week for Wrigleyville that talked about Coughlin's approach in Oakland and how I think there were some approach issues there that led to his struggle. So my feeling is that Almora, as long as the club sees some modicum of return to normal health, I think Almora will see time back in Iowa this year.
And I think that's probably a fair idea. And the major reason that I think it probably is Almora rather than Caesar being DFA'd, throwing out the idea that, you know, you're losing Caesar probably for nothing. Almora could really benefit from being in the lineup every single day rather than, you know, playing the Matt Caesar role for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the other thing to point out here is that there was a time when I think the front office probably thought that Wilson Contreras is very similar to Almora, where he was maybe going to be up while Miguel Montero was sort of an injury purgatory, for lack of a better term. But what you're seeing with how Joe Maddon is using Wilson Contreras all over the field, and he's hitting him third, fourth, fifth, he's not going back down. He came up, and it's readily apparent that they value his bat too highly not to have him on the field somewhere, even though he looks unnatural in some of those spots. So I don't think they're going to send Contreras back down. I think they'll continue to utilize him on a nearly daily basis all over the field. So I think he's here to stay. And I agree with you that Almora probably needs to be playing close to every day. So that could be a reason he goes back down.
As far as the bullpen goes, what do you see moving there? I think maybe we can go out on a limb and say that you and I have heard some rumblings that maybe Concepcion could be going down today. We don't know if that's necessarily true or not today, as in when this podcast is coming out today. We don't know if that's necessarily true or what the deal is with that, but that's a possibility. Carl Edwards is up. Spencer Patton is up. Patton struggled recently. Where is the bullpen going? Throwing out the idea that they're trading for somebody, what are they doing with that, and how does that change going forward?
Well, this is really interesting, because if Concepcion is really out, that means that you're back to a seven-man bullpen, which is Trevor Cahill, Carl Edwards Jr., Justin Grimm, Spencer Patton, Hector Rondon, Pedro Strop, and Travis Wood. So considering Edwards and Patton weren't in the major leagues as of a week ago, I admit it does suddenly look pretty thin. And there hasn't, as you said, we've heard that this is happening, but there hasn't been a corresponding move yet. So the corresponding move could be one of a couple of things. You know, you could be bringing somebody up from AAA and Armando Rivera or somebody like that. Or it could be something like Tommy LaStella coming back onto the 25-man. So we don't know what the corresponding move is yet, but by the time this airs tomorrow, it may already be released. So we'll see how that shakes out. But as it stands, you've got those seven in there, and I would bet my bottom dollar that they're going to make a trade in the next 2-3 weeks for a reliever. I don't think they're going to stick with those seven. I'll put it that way. What do you think?
To touch on what you think, if Concepcion is going down today, I would bet it's LaStella, because they really miss his bat. I think that they really need to be able to get him into the lineup if he's going well, which he has been basically all year. As far as the bullpen, I will give you the list of relievers currently either on the roster or on the DL that I do not feel comfortable putting into a game, period. Clayton Richard, I do not feel comfortable putting into a game. Justin Grimm, I do not feel comfortable putting into a game. I don't feel comfortable with Spencer Patton yet. Concepcion, if he's around, I don't feel comfortable with him in a game. Carl Edwards Jr., I want to feel comfortable with him, but I haven't seen anything yet. Mm-hmm. So that is five relievers. And Travis Wood has been good on paper, but he's not getting swings and misses at his pitches like he did last year when he was dominating. And he's had a few games where some of that contact is getting through and he's getting knocked around. So even though he's been very good, and I like Travis Wood as a late inning reliever, he makes me nervous sometimes. So
you're right. Here's why he makes you nervous, because his ERA is 2.10 and his FIP is 4.36. So it's certainly justified.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's just not getting swings and misses. It's like 18% or something like that on his fastball. It's ridiculous. But now we're getting into a situation where it's kind of 2015 all over again. Late in the season, you're trusting Trevor Cahill, Pedro Strop, and Hector Rondon. Those are the only names you can rely on. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty worrisome.
Yeah, That's not enough.
They're going to have to make a move, I think.
I agree. I think it's soon.
Yeah, I say two arms. It's got to be two arms. It doesn't. I don't think there's any way they get both arms out of New York, because I think for the Yankees, the only incentive they have to move both Betances and Andrew Miller is if they're getting a stud in place, because trading them separately, they can get so much more. They could get, you know, six or seven really good prospects for those guys if they trade them separately. To do that, right, to do them together, they'd need a guy like Schwarber. But it's got to be like, you know, trading for Andrew Miller and somebody else from somewhere else. It's got to be some kind of move like that. And we're forgetting about Joe Nathan, who apparently has looked good in his first, you know, one inning that he pitched.
And it'll be interesting to see, and Joel Peralta as well, who is in a similar spot to Nathan. So it'll be interesting to see if Nathan can offer anything. I'm not holding my breath. It'd be a bonus if he does, but I really think that Sean Doolittle is probably the odds-on favorite. And any trade is a bit of a long shot to come together, but I think it's darn near 50-50 that Doolittle becomes a Cub before the end of the season. I really think he's coming. So there's one. Do you know, is there anybody else on the A's bullpen that sort of intrigues you if they wanted to go for a 2-2-1 deal?
There was somebody, and I'm drawing a blank on it. Give me a minute to think. Who else there is on that roster there? I know I've seen people say things like, what if you do a big package deal where you get Josh Reddick and like Rich Hill and Doolittle. I think Reddick's on the DL, so that's not necessarily a big thing, but they also have their closer is Ryan Madsen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he might be
he's having a good year. I mean, he's an older guy, but he's, you know, making it work, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've got some other names.
I just pulled it up. They also have Mark Repchinski. They have Ryan Dahl, who I don't know a whole lot about, but his numbers look good. He's striking out almost 10 per nine with less than 2 walks per nine. So,
John Axford, you want to go dig in that well again?
Fernando Rodriguez, there you go. There's somebody, halfway decent. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, you probably could pull off a two for one deal where you get like Doolittle and Madsen if you want to go down that road. There's a lot of options, I think, out there.
Yeah, but I think you're right. It's at least one, and it's probably two. I mean, you never know. If a guy like Nathan does come around and can get some people out still, he may be an option back there where you see Edwards possibly, or maybe even Patton go back down. And I don't want to give up on Patton quite yet. I like Spencer Patton a lot. So I think that he actually may still play a role on the big league team. But if Nathan comes up and Edwards goes back down, and then you see a trade for somebody like Doolittle, and you go back to an eight man bullpen, I can see that moving forward. So if the back end of your bullpen was then Doolittle, Strope, Rondon, Wood, Nathan, and you know, Spencer Patton in some form, do you feel better about that with Grimm as well?
Yeah. I mean, it's better at least. But yeah, I definitely, I don't know. At this point, I can't trust Justin Grimm as far as I could throw him, which is not very far. I want to move on a little bit and talk about the Cubs and the All-Star break. We've seen, and this happens every time the Cubs are good at baseball, Cubs fans come out of the woodwork and they're pulling a Kansas City Royals on the All-Star ballot. They have Cubs leading at like every spot, which is cool if you're a Cubs fan and you want to see Anthony Rizzo out there and Dexter Fowler and Chris Bryant, guys who are deserving All-Stars. But as much as you have your man crush on Addison Russell, and as much as I enjoy him and think that he's going to be a star in Major League Baseball, I cannot find a reasonable case for him to even be on the All-Star team, much less starting.
Unfortunately, I have to agree with you. The interesting thing is he hasn't even been the most valuable shortstop on his own team. That belongs to Javier Baez, who has obviously played all over the field, but Baez has been the better player this year. So there's no way that Addison Russell belongs on the All-Star team. And this is actually a point I have a strong opinion on, which I'm sure surprises no one, but the fan balloting has got to go away. It's an absolute farce every single year. Whoever is the team that is the all the rage that year, whether it's the Royals or it's been the Cardinals in the past, now it's the Cubs, they just dominate the All-Star voting. But here's the thing. This game isn't an exhibition anymore. It means something very real, which is also not my favorite thing, but it's got to go away. And I would like to see it around something that is not about voting at all, because I think generally coaches and players and writers all do an awful job with voting that kind of thing. And so I would like to see some sort of unbiased statistical measure, whether it's an aggregate of warps across the three major sites that publish them, or something of that nature, but anything other than fan voting or voting in general, anything they could come up with would really make me happy, because the game means too much now to have guys that don't deserve it there.
I agree with your premise, but I'll throw out to you, what happens when you have, let's say, a guy like Paul Goldschmidt, who is ripping the cover off the ball, but he has an early injury, has to miss the entire month of May, comes back ripping the cover off the ball again, and his WAR is, you know, 0.0 or 0.2 lower than somebody else cumulative who's had a full season. Is it fair to start that guy at first base? Just as an example, to the greater point, I think that I hate fan voting in that they try and make the game worth something, but it's not about fan voting. To me, it's about this game should be an exhibition for the fans because it's an All-Star game. Like, I look at the NBA All-Star game, and that is pure entertainment. It is five guys jogging up and down the court, dunking and shooting half-court shots and laughing and having fun, and it's entertainment, and people are entertained by it. Same thing for the NHL All-Star game. You know, every hockey game is like 3-2 final, and the All-Star game is like 15-13. I mean, it's just fun. That's what this game should be. It should not mean something. It should be fun, and it should be something that the fans vote the starters in, and you know, blah, blah, blah. We shouldn't have, if you're going to have it be meaning something, you cannot let fans vote for the starters, mm-hmm. and you cannot just pick the previous year's World Series manager to manage the team. I can't justify that.
No, I agree. That's exactly what I'm saying. Is I never had an issue with the fan voting because I never took it seriously until they put so much weight on the game, because it is a lot of weight. And because of that, you can't, and this is what you're saying too, is you can't have one side of it say, this is a serious game. You have to take it so serious, and then leave that up to, you know, whichever team's fans you know, don't have jobs or whatever and can sit around and vote 25 times a day for their team's players. So, you know, in this case, the Cubs, sure, our team is benefiting and we're excited about that and all these guys can make it. But it's such a double standard right now because you've got one side of it being so serious and the other side of it being an absolute farce. And it's really bad and it needs to change. And I actually do think Manfred will change this because he is proven that he is just simply not oblivious to, you know, things that are really out of whack like this. So I think we'll see it change. But to your broader point about Russell, he definitely doesn't deserve to be there. So who would you put in for the National League at shortstop?
I think it's a no-brainer that it has to be Corey Seager. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's there. He definitely deserves it. Trevor Story deserves it more than Russell as well. But I think Seager's the man, and he should be.
I would say Russell is probably fourth or fifth on my list in the National League. I would put him right about, as far as just overall value on the field, he's about the same as Aledmys Diaz. Diaz is having the much better season with the bat. Russell is equally greater on defense. So they're about even. So, yeah, I would say fourth or fifth, Russell is not an all-star this season. But the same could be said for Yadier Molina, who has nothing with the bat and declining defensive skills, we shall say. I looked this up. If you're going by like Baseball Reference, they're pretty much even. But using WARP at Baseball Prospectus, Yadier Molina has 0.9 WARP, and Wilson Contreras in the major leagues has 0.6.
In eight games?
That tells you anything about the value that Yadier Molina has brought. He's been very close to replacement value.
Well, and a lot of people are bemoaning the catcher position this year, but the funny thing is that there are actually three catchers in the National League having huge offensive years. The first one is the most obvious one, and he's probably my choice, but it's very close, and that's Buster Posey. 282, 343, 453 slash. He's got two WAR on Baseball Reference. Another one is Jonathan LaCroix, 296, 356, 496 for an 852 OPS. He's got a 1.9 WAR. So those are both great seasons. And then the third one, and my dark horse candidate, and the guy that very well may deserve it because he's been a huge linchpin in the Washington Nationals offense, is Wilson Ramos.
Ramos.
342, 385 on base, and a 563 slugging. For those math majors out there, that's a 948 OPS and a 149 OPS plus. So he has been dynamite with the bat. He's got 12 home runs. That should probably be your National League starter.
That's who I had as well. I had him, and then I had Posey and LaCroix about the same.
But yeah, they're all light years. This one's even worse than Russell. So you guys can all, you know, stop saying la, 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 and get back on board with this, because this one's even more egregious than Russell. And it's time for the Yadier Molina era to end, because he's a shell of himself. Great player in his day, but anymore he's a serviceable major league catcher and really nothing more, because his bat is holding him back right now.
Yeah, he's a Hall of Very Good player. And he had some very great seasons, especially defensively, and the intangibles that you look for in a catcher. But no, he's a shell of himself. He doesn't deserve to be there. Russell, those are the two most egregious ones. And frankly, if you look at it roster by roster, those facts, just those starting lineups, I think the AL has a big advantage because they have better players at catcher and at shortstop.
Yeah, they will have a bit of an advantage. I mean, these games aren't really managed to win until the very late innings anyway, so it's kind of hard to say. I don't know. The area that they don't have an advantage in is in pitching.
Oh, yeah.
Because the National League's going to run out, you know, Kershaw and then Arrieta and then Bumgarner. That's your probably, you know, one through sixth inning, so have fun with that.
Yeah, I was going to say I would go Kershaw, and then I'd bring in Arrieta and then Bumgarner and then Syndergaard and go right, left, and
then –
and then
just
bring
for
in
fun. Scherzer. Yeah.
and then I'd bring in a couple, like, you know, the top closers, essentially. If Hector Rondon's in there, he comes in for the sixth or seventh inning, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's really just the National League at the top with the starting pitchers. There's an absolute glut right at the top of just – incredibly good arms. Even a guy like Zach Greinke, who didn't start well at all, has been really, really good over the last 6 weeks. So if he makes the team, then you can throw him out there for an inning too. So it's going to be a fun game. But yeah, your point is definitely spot on. Neither Russell nor Molina should be on this team.
Yeah. And I guess going back to our point about why this sucks to have the game matter, if you're a Cubs fan and you're thinking about this team could be in the World Series for the first time in 60 years or whatever, 70 years, are you feeling good about the idea of, you know, being down 3-2 in the ninth inning with two outs and Reds left fielder Adam Duvall coming up to the plate? And that's your shot at home field in the World Series. Is there anything worse than that?
There's nothing worse. And no disrespect to Adam Duvall, because he's had a heck of a year, but there's not. I mean, you've got, to your point, you've got a bad team, you know, with sort of a token you know, nominee for the All-Star game, and 108 years of history possibly riding on it for another team. It's just, it makes absolutely no sense, and it really grinds my gears that, you know, things like this can still exist with as far as the game has come in the last 10 years. So hopefully this is one of the last years that we have to deal with the idiocy of all of this, but here we are.
Yeah. Well, and you know, at least Major League Baseball could look at it realistically and say, are there better ways to determine home field in the World Series? You have interleague play where teams play several, you know, more than just one division commonly now. Primarily, you know, when they play, the Cubs will play the White Sox and they'll play the, you know, the AL West this year. You know, if there's a head-to-head record where a team is 2-1 against the other team, give the team that's 2-1 the home field advantage. If you don't have a head-to-head record, do it by whoever has the better record in interleague play. If one team is, you know, 9-1 or, you know, 7-3 or whatever, and is clearly better, give them the home field advantage. If they're tied, then go with whichever league won interleague play. I don't care. Just, you know, some real tiebreakers that make sense rather than whoever won a fan voted interleague exhibition game.
Yeah. And I actually, my preference is just to keep it painfully simple and say whoever had the better record. And part of that's because of there is so much interleague play now that the, you know, the records are a little bit more true as to how you are against the whole league because of the interleague play. And then if you're tied in that, then I like your idea of saying just whoever had the better record in interleague play, period. So just go overall record. And then if you're tied, say whoever had the better record in interleague play. It doesn't have to be complicated, but yep. Putting it down to one swing of Adam Duvall's bat is just doesn't make any sense at all.
And I don't mean to pick on Adam Duvall. It could be whatever terrible all-star the Braves or the Phillies have. I mean, do we want Nick Markakis deciding this game? No, we don't.
Odubel Herrera.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on. We talked about all the major talking points without going too long on this podcast. Do you have an at-bat of the week?
I do, and it was actually last week, and it's not really a traditional at-bat of the week because it wasn't a fantastic 12-pitch, awesome walk that somebody forced in the tying run or something like that. But I would be remiss if I did not give the at-bat of the week to young Wilson Contreras when on the 19th he got his first major league plate appearance against the Pirates. A.J. Shugel was pitching, relief pitcher for the Pirates, and he threw an 81-mile-an-hour backup changeup that landed right smack dab in the middle of the zone. This was the first pitch that Wilson Contreras had ever seen in his major league career, and he smacked it to center field about 400 feet for a home run on the very first pitch. And watching Wilson Contreras run around the bases and beat his chest and point to the dugout and just the sheer elation on that 24-year-old young man's face was really, again, everything that I love about baseball. It was seeing someone who came from not very much and worked his tail off and switched positions and worked his way all the way through the Cubs system and got beyond a Rule 5 draft 2 years ago where no one selected him, and then, you know, won the batting title in the for the Tennessee Smokies last year, and then in AAA just raked, and then finally makes it to the show. It was actually his third game, but his first at bat, pinch hits one pitch home run. And it was a storybook that you just have to sit back and marvel at. And I loved it. And I loved seeing Contreras have that moment. I loved seeing all the joy on his fellow players' faces. It was unmitigated joy for a bunch of young men. And it really left a mark on me. And your at bat of the week is Wilson Contreras' first pitch home run, first of his career, and one of, I think, 31 players to do that in Major League history.
Yeah, that was an awesome moment, even though I think that was a blowout win over the Pirates and the game maybe was being decided in that moment. That was just a really cool thing. Looking at Contreras specifically, we didn't talk about him much with the roster crunch, but Joe Maddon has done Joe Maddon things with Contreras, putting him at first base and putting him in left field, where he's actually surprisingly not looked bad considering never playing there, even in the minors. What do you think about him being on the roster going forward? Do you think that he makes it all the way through September and into October?
Yeah. And I'm not sure if I said this earlier or not. I was thinking it, but when they brought him up, I don't think that they really intended that he would be up all year. I think it was very much like the Schwarber call up last year where, you know, they called him up for the DH games in the American League for six games, I think. I think they called him up because Miguel Montero was struggling with his health. I think it was a back. It wasn't really disclosed, but you could tell he wasn't running well. He wasn't coming out of his crouch well. He wasn't really doing anything well, to be honest. But and then all of a sudden they got a look at Wilson Contreras, and Joe Maddon said, "Oh, sorry, mine now. You're not getting him back." So Contreras, ever since that third game where he finally got to pinch hit, he's been hitting third, fourth, fifth every game. And now they're talking about him catching at least two out of the five in the rotation and possibly three out of the five. So that tells me Wilson Contreras is your number one catcher all of a sudden. So, yeah, I think he's going to stand outside of a prolonged slump or something like that. I think that Wilson Contreras is probably first on the depth chart for catchers all of a sudden.
I agree with most of that. I do think that they intended to keep him up all year when they called him up. I think that's why they waited and kept Fedorovich on the roster for so long, is they wanted to make absolutely sure that once they called up Contreras, he wasn't going back. And I think that's what factored into this, the decision to call him up, is they were at the point where they said, we are comfortable enough with this guy that we're going to have him on the roster, start him a couple days a week, you know, behind the plate, get him comfortable, prepare him, let him learn from Miguel Montero and David Ross while they're both still around, because Ross won't be around next year, and get him ready to be catcher of the Chicago Cubs 2017. And, you know, whatever he can provide us with the bat, he can do that too. I think they probably saw just how close to ready this guy was. He may not be all the way there with his catching skills, but man, he has an arm. He can block the ball behind the plate. He does most of the important things that a catcher does at a very high level, and he's got a great bat. There's no reason to make an argument to get this guy back down to AAA or not into the lineup, I think.
Yeah, and it was just so fitting, because we've witnessed, not only with John Lester's issues throwing the ball to first base and holding runners on, we've witnessed a real struggle from Miguel Montero, just kind of keeping the running game in check, because his arm is just not there. He's really slow out of the crouch, and his throws are not only not hard enough to get anybody, but they're not online. He's really struggled. So it was pretty gratifying to see Contreras get in there and Matt Carpenter get a little cocky and hot shotty and decide to take off for second. Okay, let's see what you've got, kid. And then just get thrown out by a long ways and get tagged right in the face too. I couldn't stop laughing at that play as I rewound it and watched it. He threw him out by so far, it was comical. So it's been fun seeing Contreras change the sort of game plan for other teams trying to run on the Cubs, as they've been doing like crazy on Montero. So he's bringing a lot to the table, even if he's not quite bringing the game calling and the pitch framing like the other guys are. I'm loving it. I'm loving seeing his bat in there every day. And I think he's just another guy in the middle of that lineup. You know, next year you're looking at Rizzo, Bryant, Contreras, Schwarber, Hayward, Zobrist, you know, who knows else, Soler possibly, and then Russell Baez. It is just an absolute embarrassment of big bats in the middle, and it's really, really fun.
Going a little forward, I've got a question of the week, and it's relating to the catcher situation. We know Ross is going to be gone. We know Contreras should be around. Montero, we don't know. We assume he will. Question of the week is from Michael Metzger, at Pappy Metzger on Twitter. Says, how many games for Schwarber at catcher in 2017? And then I'm going to add to this and say, we'll throw out an over-under. Over-under 10.5 games for Schwarber at catcher in 2017.
Under. For me, under in 2017. It may be more in 2018 after Montero is gone. But for next year, I'm going to say under because I think Montero will catch 50 games, maybe 60 games. I think Contreras is going to catch like 90 next year. So between the two of them, this is assuming health, which you can't, but assuming health, I think they're going to catch 150 or more. I think Schwarber will get in there for a few, and then you may have a few throwaway games from whoever the, you know, the 4A catcher is at that point, depending on health. So I don't think they view Kyle Schwarber as a catcher anymore. And I know that there's some people out there saying, yeah, with this injury, you should be able to come back and do it. But he was a fringe catcher before defensively, and taking away some mobility and some quickness and some ability to pop out of the crouch and things of that nature. I don't think they need him to catch, and I don't really think he's going to be good enough to catch on this team. So I'm going to say under on 10.5. What do you think?
I will say over, and I will give you my reasons why, mostly because it's like a domino effect with the logic, like because this, then this. First of all, one of the things that they love about Schwarber is his attitude, and where he's basically said, I'm a damn catcher. That's what I do. I can play left field too, but I'm going to work my ass off to be a catcher. And that's one of the things they absolutely fell in love with him on. I think they're going to give him every opportunity to rehab himself to the point where he can catch again, and they'll give him the chance to try and do it. They're not just going to come out and say, no, you're not a catcher anymore. Sorry. They're not going to take it away with him without seeing it for themselves that he can't do it. If they're going to give him the chance to see it for themselves, they're going to have to roll with it in the way that they did this year, where they were going to give him one start every 5 days and put him with Jason Hamill specifically. And that was going to be his guy. So they're going to probably, once he's healthy, get back in that kind of same situation, whether it's Hamill or somebody else, he'll catch somebody specifically. And I think he'll start, if he's healthy, 20 to 25 games, maybe 30 games behind the plate next year, unless they decide, no, you absolutely can't do it. But like you just said, there have been a lot of people out there, more medical expert than you or I, who have said this specific injury, if he comes back from it fully healthy, it shouldn't change anything for Kyle Schwarber behind the plate.
Yeah, that's all fair, no doubt. The one thing that kind of caught my eye is last week he said that what had been really, really hard for him was the mobility and just even bending his knee. And that was what was really painful and really hard after the surgery. So I'm just hearing that and I'm going, man, is he really going to be able to get back to a place where he can be a serviceable defensive catcher in the majors? And I'm just not sure he can be. I'm not even sure it's prudent for the Cubs to do that with as good as his bat is. So I'm just looking at the scenario and thinking, well, the Cubs are going to want Contreras' bat in the lineup 150 times next year. So if he's in there, are you ever really going to have him play left field and have Schwarber catch? I'm not sure that makes any sense, really. I think Contreras is always going to be catching. And when Montero's catching, you're going to have you're going to have Contreras out there somewhere. So you're going to have Schwarber. I don't know. It's just, there's a lot of different things you could do, but I'm just not sure any of them really lead me back to seeing Schwarber catch a lot of games. I will say, I hope you're right, because I'd love to see him back there and I would love to see him come all the way back. I'm hoping for him and cheering for him to do that, but I don't think the odds are in his favor.
Yeah. And you could be right that's the way it is for him. But it takes us all the way back to the points I made earlier, where as much as I love Kyle Schwarber and I love that special bat, we know there's going to be a logjam in the outfield. We talked about the idea of bringing Fowler back could be in their best interest. You have your pretty much everyday catcher now, splitting time with Miguel Montero behind the plate. I just wonder if trading Kyle Schwarber might be what's best for them in their long term. I don't want to make that case because it makes me feel dirty to make that case.
You are dirty.
I am dirty. I just think that's, if there's one player that just because of his set of skills and where he plays and what the Cubs already have in place does not fit moving forward. I mean, I think, pardon the pun, I think Schwarber is the square peg going in the round hole.
I just want to throw one lineup out there and see how it hits you though. Let's make an assumption that they don't sign Dexter Fowler back.
Sure. Fair assumption too.
Yeah. You put, right, because I think the odds are still pretty low. You put Contreras behind the plate, Rizzo, Zobrist, Russell, Baez at third, and that's your best defensive infield out of Chris Bryant's own mouth, which you mentioned earlier. And then in the outfield, you've got Schwarber, Hayward, and Bryant across, which I don't think it's a great outfield, but I think it's still average defensively. So you've got, in one lineup, you've got Schwarber, Hayward, Bryant, Baez, Russell, Zobrist, Rizzo, and Contreras. That's
a good lineup.
That's insanely good.
Then I have other questions for you. Where are Soler and Almora?
Soler is your probably traded. No, okay. he's your bench bat. I think in that lineup, he's your bench bat. I like Almora as a bench bat there too, in a late inning defensive replacement. So you've got, theoretically, you've got Montero, Soler, Almora, and Caesar on the bench. And, you know, if they go with an 8-man pen, that's your bench.
I don't love Soler as a bench bat, mostly because he's a pinch hitter and then he doesn't do anything. He's not a guy you're bringing in defensively. And unless he's improved to the point where he is clearly better than Schwarber in the outfield, I could see you pinch hitting him for Schwarber or for somebody else in the lineup and moving him out into left field. But man, I just don't love, I feel like you're reducing Soler's value to almost nothing if he's just your bench bat.
And I actually agree with that, which is why I would probably trade him. If he still has the value that he had last offseason, which is when they should have traded him, in my opinion, if he still has that value, I would go ahead and trade him, because the guy I didn't mention in this equation who deserves to be mentioned is Tommy La Stella. So that would leave La Stella as your fourth bench bat. And you still got an extremely strong bench in that equation. So I don't have any problem with what you're saying about Soler not being a bench bat. And if that's the case, then get something good for him. Get a controlled starter or, you know, a couple good relievers for him.
All right. I think that's pretty much all I had. Do you have anything to add before we head off into our 7-0 week against the Reds and the Mets?
No, I really don't. The only thing I would say is hang in there, fans, because this week is probably the worst week of the entire season that the Cubs are going to have. It's all uphill from here, and don't worry too much about it. This is still a great team, not a good team, a great team, and we're just around the corner from another long winning streak. So hang in there.
Well, I'm at Ryan Davis BP. You are at Isaac C. Bennett. You can follow the podcast for any fun tweets or tweeting out specific episodes of the podcast at BP WrigleyCast. You can also email us BPWrigleyCast@baseballperspectives.com. I think that's pretty much it. We look forward to hopefully getting at least Joel back next week. I think Carlos might be staying at AnthroCon or whatever it is. A few extra weeks. I don't know what he's up to, but hopefully if a larger crowd next week, so it's not just you and me throwing out our bad opinions
and turning off all of our listeners and, you know, just watching ratings plummet.
Yeah, no, that's all right. Nobody made it this far into listening anyway, so we can say whatever we want.
All right, have a good one, buddy.
All right, good night.